The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Now steps back for three. Nice move. Minnesota leading by seven. Real physical down low. The fadeaway is butter. Towns. A little show and go. Floater. Got it back. Nice. He stays with it. Towns with 14 in the fourth quarter. He went to town as Minnesota gets its first win against Golden State this year.
Yeah, that was kind of fun yesterday, wasn't it?
Not bad at all. And you know, we were texting before, like I sent you a text before the game, like I'm really about to watch this because I felt bad because I missed the Celtics game. Well, I don't feel bad about missing that, I guess, but I would have liked to have watched it, I guess. And then they actually win with no Jimmy Butler and even no Steph Curry. So everyone's shorthanded and everything's all equal there.
I think the most important thing about winning the game. We are the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes,
by the way,
are.
That's the voice of Derek James. I'm Manny Hill. We're brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. I guess what I took away from the game on Sunday was the Wolves had some things go into their favor, you know, throughout the entire game. There was no Steph Curry, you know, Iggy was out. I think they were missing David West too.
Yeah.
So you've got you know their second best player and two key reserves off of their bench were out.
By the way, how do you decide if Steph Curry or Kevin Durant is the better player? Because that's really hard.
It is very debatable. But you have that plus you have Durant and Clay having sort of an off shooting.
They went
8
for 24 from 3, but Durant went to the line 12 times for 12 shots and made all 12.
Yeah, so I think Durant was 11 for 32 from the field.
Yeah, that sounds
something
right.
Something like that. And Clay, I don't know what Clay's totals were, but I think he was 3 of 12 from 3 or something like that. So you have
Durant made 5, Clay had 3. Yeah.
Yeah, so you have that and you have, you know, the guys that were out. I mean, everything was sort of leaning in the Wolves' favor at that point.
Aside from the whole missing Jimmy Butler thing.
Right.
And playing Derrick Rose in the game.
Which we're going to get to in just a second here. But I think it was really important for them to win that game because you're not going to get that sort of circumstance against Golden State every time you play them. I mean, if you're going to beat them, that was about your best chance to beat them. On Sunday, and they took advantage.
In recent seasons, when they have beaten them, they've got, you know, like an enigmatic scoring performance from Shabazz Muhammad.
Yeah.
And they've needed guys to just step up and, you know, take care of business. And Karl Anthony Towns, I mean, 31 points, 14 in the fourth alone, 16 rebounds. That's as big as it gets. And then Nemanja Bjelica.
Oh.
The last couple games, he is going to be hard to sit out for the rest of, well, not play more. And I mean, you look at like, what are they going to do with him in the offseason? Because his contract's coming up and he's really, you know, proving himself. And he's really gotten so much better this season.
Yeah, I mean, we asked for some questions from our listeners and we got a couple questions about, you know, looking ahead to the offseason already, which, I mean, I think even though there's so much basketball left to be played for this team, I think that thinking, you know, looking ahead to the offseason to just see what they're going to do, I think is kind of a fair question at this point because you've got some contracts that you're kind of looking at and saying, okay, can they hold on to this? And, you know, you got Jimmy, you know, you're going to have to think about extending, you know, Kat's contract is going to be kind of a talker this summer because they're going to have an opportunity to extend him. You know, you've got to be thinking about extending Jimmy as well. So we can get to that.
Do you think Jimmy takes an extension or does he take that to free agency and then resign there? Or is it way too soon to know?
I think it's way too soon to know.
I think so.
I think how this season finishes will determine that. I think what they do in the offseason may determine that too. And with Jimmy, I think you just don't really, you can't, it's hard to really get a read on Jimmy when it comes to things like that. Like, I think he's obviously, since he's come here, we've gotten sort of the full-fledged Jimmy Butler personality in terms of just the kind of person mm-hmm. that he is and the kind of basketball player that he is.
See,
but I think
I've
with contract stuff, I think he's very, very, it's very, very hard to predict him.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, of course, say for sure, but just being around him, he's a guy who said, you know, I don't care where I play. I mean, yeah. I don't go outside. And then he lives in L.A., you know, in the warm months. So it doesn't really matter. I think to him, about, you know, like, oh, Minnesota and the cold weather tax and all that. I don't think that matters. I mean, look at the reason why he's here. It's the Tom Thibodeau relationship.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's a bigger relationship guy. So if he has someone like, you know, Taj with him and, you know, he knows Tom Thibodeau, I think he likes Kat. I think he likes Tyus. I think he likes the team. And so I think all those things are going in the Wolves' favor, but I think ultimately team success is going to play a huge factor in it.
Let's talk about Derrick Rose. You and I are in 100% agreement on the signing of him, and
it's all bad.
Yeah,
there's no sensible reason for this.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you take out the off the court stuff, the sexual assault allegations,
can we say gang rape on the podcast? Because that's really what the accusation was.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can. I think you can say it. I'm not entirely sure.
And I mean, that's a thing where, at best, I mean, he just has crappy views towards women, which is problematic in itself. And the thing be like, oh, well, you know, he wasn't convicted. Well, I mean, rape and sexual assault, they have one of the lowest conviction rates, yet they have
very, very, very complicated one.
And they also have one of the lowest rates of false reporting from Jessica Luther's book on the Baylor stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot to it. And I mean, they're so tough to prove because you do have the he said, she said. And unless you have, like, you know, explicit evidence, it's really tough.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if you take all of that, you know, and then there's the, you know, when he was with the Knicks last year, he just randomly disappeared and nobody knew where he was.
He's been questioning his commitment to basketball for the better part of 4 years. Remember 2014, he was like, hey, I got to make sure, you know, I can still walk into business meetings or my son's graduation.
The Rachel Nichols interview.
Which are all you know, important things to think about. But he's spent the last 4 years doing this. And now apparently it's, now I'm all in. Yeah. Well, of course, you're not walking away from all that Adidas shoe money, because if he retires, he forfeits all that.
Right.
As of a couple of years ago, it was $80 million, so it's probably still a substantial number.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if you take out, like, all of the off-the-court
all of that
stuff, even if you just talk about it from just pure basketball reasons, it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
One of the... I enjoyed it. So I was writing my piece on Derrick Rose for the website that went up Thursday. And I was sitting with my girlfriend as I was writing it. She looked over and saw the subheading, one of the league's worst three-point shooting teams as one of the worst three-point shooters in history. And it's true. Of all the players who have ever taken 1,000 or more threes and made fewer than or less than 30% of them, Derrick Rose has the 10th highest percentage. Mm. And, I mean, at least he's kind of aware that he can't shoot, but that still doesn't help the team.
Yeah.
And we saw really the worst of it in his 6 minutes. On the offensive end, for sure, when he had 5 shots in 6 minutes, and that was as many as Towns had to that point. The bench doesn't need another guy like that. I mean, you already have Jamal Crawford.
He was a minus 17. And again, we typically don't want to put too much stock in, like, you know, just the basic plus minus, but... You're a minus 17 in six and a half minutes on the floor.
The play where he lost Quinn Cook.
Yeah.
And
that
he just
can't happen.
Frolicked to the basket untouched for a layup.
And you got some people, you know, some people say, wow, you know, he's just rusty. And
he's been bad defensively forever? I don't ever remember him having a good defensive reputation.
He was okay. Like his first, the first couple of years with Tibbs. I think he was okay.
You were like, yeah, he can live with it.
Yeah, and because they were he was surrounded by so many other good defensive
and
players.
And he was so athletic.
And he was so athletic, so you just figure, okay, well, you surround him with really good defensive players, you know, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, you know, Taj, even a young Taj Gibson at the time. Then you're like, okay, yeah, you can live with, you know, maybe a few defensive deficiencies here and there, but
because he can give you 35 at any given night at the time,
right? But now it's like, okay, you got Jeff Teague, who we know is, you know, I like Jeff Teague, but we know he's not the strongest defender in the world. And you've got, you know, Andrew Wiggins, who kind of is hit and miss, who's improved defensively, but, you know, he's still kind of inconsistent on that end of the floor. You've got your best defensive player is out. And, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And then the shooting, like you mentioned, this team needs three-point shooting, and then you go ahead and you add a guy who cannot shoot threes.
They need threes of defense and wing depth, and they added a point guard who doesn't play defense and can't shoot. They address depth at the position they're already deepest at. Just to make sure that we're... And just the funny thing is, too, I was looking at Aaron Brooks's numbers, and you compare that the advanced stats to Derrick Rose's this season. Almost identical. Mm-hmm. Brooks typically has the edge in a few of them, which is... There's just no reason for this other than Tom Thibodeau just kind of wanting to take that sentimental trip and get... But I just hope that he gets us out of his system, you know, for these 16 games, then we can all move on.
Yeah, because I just... And I tweeted out during the game Sunday that this just... It reminds me a lot of when the Twins made that August... I think it was an August trade. It was a post...
Waiver deadline deal?
Post-waiver deadline trade for Brett Boone in 2005. And Brett Boone at that point... He was already like declined, and you know there were the PED speculation and all that stuff because his numbers had just suddenly just dropped, you know, after some, you know, putting up some crazy years in Seattle.
Wasn't he AL MVP? Like
he was like a runner up or something, because I think it was the year Ichiro won the MVP, and Brett Boone that year with the Mariners drove in like 140 runs or that something like that.
That might have been
like
their
that.
Last playoff team, too.
Yeah, it might have been.
Because they have the longest drought in baseball.
Yeah, you know what? I think that was the last time they made the playoffs. Yeah. Because it was the first year after, it was the first year post A-Rod. And yeah, but anyway, like, it just reminds me, like, the Twins made that trade for Brett Boone, and they gave up, you know, I don't even remember the guy they gave up. They gave up some, you know, A ball pitcher or something like that, who, you know, whatever. But he got here and he was terrible. He was terrible, and you could just see he had nothing left, and it's just kind of like, okay, this is just not going to work, you know. And I think the Twins ended up releasing him after, I think he was with the team for like 3 weeks or like a month or something like that, and then they released him, and it was just not going to work. Now, I don't think that's going to happen with Derrick Rose in terms of them releasing him, but this just has that same type of feel of, you know, you just bring a guy in because it's a name, and, you know, and I guess in this case, Tibbs is familiar with him, but there's just nothing there. There's just nothing no. left that can help you with anything. I don't understand it. I just really don't get it at all. So let's, as I mentioned earlier, we talked about, we threw out a flyer for questions, and we actually got a few good ones. So we'll go with Drew. Drew says, what is it going to take for the offense to consistently run through Cat in crunch time like it did at the end of the Golden State game? I think it's a great question. I was thinking about this after the Portland game, where Dame just sort of went off the TNT game about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, I thought to myself, yeah, Cat needs to get the ball more, but how do you, he's a big, like, it's not like a wing guy that you just give the ball and he runs up the court, runs up the floor, and then...
It's really tough to dump it in, but...
Yeah, but you've got to find a way to do it, especially now with Jimmy out. Like, Cat is your best player, so you've got to... In the fourth quarter in a tight game, you've got to get him touches. He's got to get shots, and as we saw in the Golden State game. So how do you do it consistently? Because I mean, I guess you could look at what you did against Golden State and do that, but I don't know. Like, can you consistently do that? Or is there anything specifically like that you saw from the game that you think, okay, they should do this specifically to get Cat in positions to score?
I mean, I think what you do against, you know, the Warriors may not, you know, just carry over to everybody. But, I mean, I think Jeff Teague, you know, said just give it to him on the block. I mean, the thing with Cat is you have options. It's not like you can't say, oh, well, you know, he can't have the ball on the perimeter. It's a nightmare.
Right.
He can get the ball anywhere and be effective and turn it into something. I mean, so I think getting him involved, you know, in the pick and roll is a great idea as a roll man or a pick and pop situation. Things like that that can keep the defense guessing and give the team options. Because Cat can pass, too. I wouldn't say he's a great passer, but he's a good passer. Yeah. And from there, other opportunities can come about. And if he's on, he's going to draw attention. That's going to free somebody up. That's up to Cat to make the read from there. So
does he need to do a better job of being a little more assertive?
I think that's what Teague said after the game. He said something to the effect of, you know, we need him, you know, to make those plays down the stretch, and he did. He played great. And we just told him, you know, get down on the block, and he did that, and we got the win. And so, yeah, I think just, you know, kind of like we're talking about Wiggins, just being aggressive and not waiting for the game to come to you.
Because I feel like there's just got to be some of just more of a demand for the basketball. Like, just give me the damn ball.
Like, if Jimmy Butler doesn't get the ball, it's like, okay, you guys do your thing. I mean, it'd be nice if you gave it to me, but no, he's like, he's probably going to the huddle saying, give me the bleeping ball.
Yeah.
It's so not a question.
And sometimes, you know, you watch Cat not get touches and you're like, gosh, you got to get him the ball. But then you'd look at some of the situations and he's just kind of standing there where he's, you know, standing on, you know, a wing, or he's on the low block, but he's not really trying to fight with somebody for position. He's just kind of like, okay, what do I do here? What do I stand and watch Jimmy, or do I stand and watch Andrew? Like, I just feel like there's got to be a little bit more of give me the bleeping ball. And it seemed like there was more of that in the Golden State game on Sunday.
Yeah, and I agree. One thing I like that I always loved this, when LeBron was in Miami, I think early on, maybe it might have been the first season, they ran this pick and roll with Wade and LeBron. But LeBron would just flare out to the elbow, and that would draw in the bigs defender as well. So they'd think, oh yeah, we're going to double team LeBron if he's going to, you know, get the ball that close.
Yeah.
And all he had to do was just dump it off to Udonis Haslem at the rim. I mean, so even if there's just the threat of Cat doing something there, that's going to bend the defense. But yeah, like you said, if he's just standing out there on a wing or just standing in the post harmlessly, like, that's not going to do anything for them.
Yeah. And I also think, too, if you're Tibbs, there's got to be an emphasis on getting him the basketball, too.
Yes.
In situations. Like, there has to be. Like, you just, especially now with no Butler, like, you gotta run this thing through.
And it's so weird because he did run a good amount of motion in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the weird thing, why we're just not seeing the big get as involved. You know, have Towns catch the ball at the elbow. See, does he have the shot? Can he take his guy off the dribble? Is someone else open? Is there a cutter? I mean, all these sorts of things that could be done that just aren't. So I do think, you know, there's some that, you know, Tom Thibodeau, you know, and the coaches, they need to, we don't really know what happens, but let's just blame the coaches here, too. The coaches all need to get on page with that, and then also Towns needs to make sure he's doing his part to put himself in a position to get the ball in those situations.
From Jesse, will Cat join the 50-40-90 club at some point in his career? This is an interesting question.
2022. No, I don't know the answer for sure. But I mean, like his chances.
Yeah, he's capable. I mean, he's been a 50-plus field goal percentage guy his whole career. I mean, I say his whole career like he's been in the league for 10 years, but, you know, he's in his third year. But, you know, he's definitely a 50% and higher field goal percentage guy. He's shooting 40-plus percent from three this year, and I think his free throws are, what, about 85, 86?
86, I thought.
Yeah, so, I mean, you figure if the first two percentages, you know, stay consistent, and he gets a little bit better at the free throw line, which there's not much improvement needed, I mean, he's certainly capable of doing that, which, as a 7-foot big man is just insanity if you do that.
Okay, so Cat is currently at 54.5 from the field, 41.4 from three, and 85.4. And actually, interesting thing, his field goal percentage has gone up 2 points each year from 81.1, 83.2 to 85.4.
Wow.
That's just a slow climb up. So, I mean, at this rate, three more seasons, 2021. I'm sorry, I was off a year. 2021, I'm calling it.
Nice. Good question, Jesse. So, to answer your question quickly, yes. We think he'll do it. Another question. What happens to Gorgie Jang this offseason? I
bet we hear some rumors.
Yeah, I think we'll hear some rumors. I just don't. I feel like Gorgie's a good player, but I just wonder if teams are going to look at his contract now.
Well, and the season, too.
Yeah.
If they say, he needs to be a starter, but it's not ideal that he's a starter, who's going to do that? Like, is Brooklyn going to be like, yeah, we'll take Gorgie Jang for another, $30 million over the next two?
Right. Like, I feel like, in a case like Brooklyn, I mean, they just traded for Jahlil Okafor, and they got, they got Mozgov, and they've got bigs that...
Of undesirable contracts.
Yeah, so it's like Gorgie, if you move Gorgie Jang to Brooklyn, he's going to be in the same type of situation that he's in here, where it's going to be kind of a logjam at the position, and, he's probably going to get about the same amount of playing time, maybe a little bit more.
I bet he stays, unless, someone just really all of a sudden is hot on Gorgie Jang, and they didn't seem that hot on him at the deadline.
Yeah, the only team I could think of, I know Doogie has said multiple times that the Clippers like him, but does that mean that they're going to give up?
Do they like him, Manny, or do they like him?
The question is, do they like him enough to give up anything of substantial value for him?
What do they have? Everyone's going to say Lou Williams, and, maybe that's not a bad idea at this point. I just watched Derrick Rose play for them, so I don't.
I'd take Patrick Beverley. What's Patrick Beverley's contract like?
Give me a minute. Let's fill this so we don't have dead silence. Since these mics are so hot, it's going to hear me typing away here.
Yeah, we're taping in a different studio, by the way, than usual.
We can hear the walls in our headphones. It's kind of wild.
The walls are whispering to us.
Here we go.
And also, what kind of season is Patrick Beverley having?
This is a great NBA podcast.
Because if that...
Oh, man, $10 million over the next... Oh, he got his extension, though. 4 years, $25
million. Okay.
Six-ish million.
But if you're the Clippers, why would you want to part with him? Unless you just feel like...
Oh, wait, I was thinking Lou Williams. He didn't just...
Oh, you're thinking of Lou Williams, okay.
Yeah, never mind. He has owed a combined $10.5 million over the next two seasons. Through next year.
See, that seems like a pretty friendly contract. So, I mean, I don't... If you're the Clippers, why would you want to give that up to...
I mean... To take on another year of salary when you're maybe rebuilding by that point?
Right.
Like, I don't see... And if they still think they can make the playoffs, I don't see how that move, raises that ceiling.
That's the thing. Like, if you're going to move Gorgie Jang, which, again, we don't even know if they really want to.
Yeah.
But... That's what you're going to have to convince somebody to take.
Ooh,
to take the contract. Is he having a bad year?
No, the shots aren't going in.
Oh.
The assist numbers aren't there either. But then again, you're not playing next to James Harden either.
Right.
He's only played 11 games, though, so, I mean, what do you take from that?
Has he been hurt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like in November.
I'll take his defense, though. I would definitely take his defense.
Chris Paul left the Clippers, and so did my interest in watching them, apparently. I mean, yeah, he had microfracture and a torn meniscus in his right knee.
Oh, that's rough. From Aaron, if Wiggins has a mediocre to subpar ending to the season, do you expect the Wolves to aggressively work to deal him this offseason so they don't become weighed down by three max contracts?
I think Tibbs and Glenn Taylor like him way too much.
Yeah, I just...
Tom Thibodeau would lay down on 394 in rush hour for Derrick Rose after 6 years of being bad. So, I mean, I don't think he's giving up on Andrew Wiggins right now.
Yeah, I mean, it would take... I think it would take something substantial in return to do it. And if you're another team right now, why would you give up anything of substantial value for Andrew Wiggins right now? I mean, if he, especially if he, like Aaron says, if he, you know, if he finishes, if he has a mediocre finish to the season, like you're just not going to get, nobody's going to want to take on that contract with, you know, coming off a season where he just didn't play very well. So I don't see it happening. I don't see anything coming out of that, really.
Well, I think you try to figure out what Jimmy's going to do, too, whenever you get to that point.
Yeah.
Before you decide, you know, do you need to move this contract? Because, yeah, I mean, if all of a sudden you're tearing things down, maybe it doesn't make sense to carry two max contracts. And I would pick Towns over Wiggins, personally.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't see it right now. I mean, he's still not... He's not even 24 years old yet.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's concerning because, you know, we're almost 4 years into this. And
I'm not saying I'm not frustrated about we're still having the same conversations after 4 years. It drove me nuts with Shabazz Muhammad, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a tough one because we're 4 years into this and we're seeing, you know, we've seen him sort of regress in some areas of his game, offensively especially. But he has improved defensively, I think. And I mean, you just have to, the thing with Wiggins is the contract isn't going anywhere now. Like, he's going to get his money, rather you keep him or trade him. So the Wolves basically have two options here. They can trade him for probably 50 cents on the dollar, or you can...
That would be, I think, kind of terrible process, too. Sign the guy, and then you panic trade him after, you know, a rough season.
Yeah, so you can either do that, or you can say, okay, he's 22, and how do we get him back on track? That's what they're going to have to figure out, you know, and, you know, maybe he finishes the season strong. We still got 15 or so games left, but, you know, that is, I think this offseason is really going to have to be the biggest task for Tom Thibodeau, I think, is getting him and Jimmy Butler. Because we've seen Wiggins play well for the most part with Jimmy out. But we've also seen Andrew struggles when Jimmy is in there, where he just kind of fades off on the offensive end. And he's very passive, and then he starts taking bad shots.
Well,
and all this
did you see
stuff.
Wiggins' quotes from last night?
I did, yeah.
And I mean, about just, you know, being aggressive and, you know, like, you know, I love my shot. And I kind of realized after the Boston game when he went like 1-for-8 from 3. And I mean, Teague even talked about it afterwards, too. It's like he bails out defenses so much when he settles for those jumpers.
And those fadeaways off the block, too.
Oh, they're terrible. Yeah. I wish we could find a way to scrub every Kobe highlight reel he's ever seen to get those out of his mind.
This? That's the crazy thing, Derek. How many times have we had this conversation with Andrew Wiggins? It's like, he's got it. I mean,
he seems to at least be aware of it. It's like you just have to keep doing it. And I wrote about this for tomorrow, my column that's going to go up sometime tomorrow. I don't know. That he can't just do this against the Warriors and the Cavaliers. Like, you need to bring it in that mid-February game in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And, you know, any other, you know, trash team right now. That's what all the great players do. Jimmy Butler, oh, that's the Kings. I'm just going to drift tonight.
Yeah.
No, like he brings it every single night and he plays like he's trying to prove himself.
Jimmy's got control of this game, so I'll just kind of stand off and like, I mean,
it should be like, no, let's finish this thing.
That's the thing that I think that's going to be the number one priority for Tom Thibodeau this offseason is, you know, because I don't know if we're going to see Jimmy again this season, you know, maybe if they get to the Western Conference Finals or something, I don't know. Maybe we'd see Jimmy then. But I just think that number one priority for Tom Thibodeau in terms of just dealing with what is internally with this team is figuring out this Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins chemistry in terms of just like he's got to figure it out.
Because
the contract isn't going anywhere.
Does Andrew need to move in with Jimmy and Jimmy say, get that video game controller out of your hand. We're waking up at 5:30 for some crazy psycho workout.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I don't know, man. But that's definitely, that's priority number one, because, I mean, like I said, that contract is what it is, and I know people don't like it, and, you know, I was kind of lukewarm on it, but it is what it is. It's there. You can't, it's not the NFL where you can just cut a guy after year two.
And pay him $2 million.
Yeah, I mean, the contract is what it is. Andrew Wiggins is going to get his money, so Tom Thibodeau just has to figure out how this is going to work. He's just got to continue to try and develop him. Last question from Jake. Why hasn't Anthony Brown got a chance in the NBA yet? I think this is a great question.
Hey, he has. He's played 40 games for three teams. No, actually, I have no idea why. Nobody talks about Anthony Brown. I mean, I don't mean that to sound flippant or snarky, but nobody talks about him. He doesn't come up. It's, you know, usually you hear more about Justin Patton coming from the team, or, you know, more Marcus George's Hunt. He's actually cracked the rotation here and there this season. He was supposed to be a shooter, and he had a rough start to his career. In two games for the Magic last season, he kind of showed a little bit that maybe he could put it together, but that just hasn't really come through. So there must be something behind the scenes that the team is seeing that we're not.
Yeah, I mean, because it's that has to be it, because it's strange to me that a team that doesn't have a lot of three-point shooting and doesn't have a lot of wing depth would not be playing a guy that, in theory, would give you both of those things. So there has to be something that we're not seeing, like whether it's practice or down in, you know, I've seen highlights of one. Admittedly, I've seen highlights of one Iowa Wolves game this year, and that was Justin Patton's debut.
Fairweather fan.
So I have not gotten a chance to see Anthony Brown in action down there at all. So I don't know exactly how he's doing or what's missing from his game. And obviously he's bounced from a couple of teams. So there's that part of it too, where he just hasn't really gotten a chance to establish himself yet. But I mean, if he supposedly would fill two needs that this team has, and he's still not seeing the court. So something has to be missing. Something has to be, you know, they have to be seeing something to not be one to put him on the floor.
This goes to our points here. So he didn't really produce a lot his first 3 years at Stanford, and it looks like he got hurt because he only played 4 years as a junior.
Yeah.
Came back the next two seasons and shot 45% from three and 44% from three the next two seasons. So he really put his shot together. Otherwise, he was 35% his first couple of years. I mean, he can shoot. There's something there. I mean, maybe he can't do it at the NBA level against, you know, NBA talent, but we don't really know. We haven't seen, nobody's seen enough of him to know whether or not he could do it against NBA talent.
Yeah. I mean, it would be nice. I mean, it would be nice to see him just see the floor, just to see if is anything. I mean, we talked about this before, like,
maybe when they're up by 40 against the Rockets in the fourth quarter on next Sunday. Yeah, either one, that's fine. Just put him in, just give him a little bit of burn and see what happens.
Let's talk about where they are in the playoff race right now, because, you know, before we started taping, we were talking a little bit about sort of what they need to do and some of the wins that they need to get down the stretch here. We're talking 15 games left as of this taping, 39-29. Sitting in the fifth spot, tied with Oklahoma City, basically, for that fifth and sixth
spot. Do any of my division standings? No, we already went over this. We're fine.
Yeah. I mean, to me right now, the biggest threat to them is, I mean, obviously if they lose a bunch of games, then they're going to be in trouble anyway. But to me, their biggest threat is Denver. And Denver, a couple of weeks ago, went into Cleveland and won a game. And that's where you're sort of, if you're schedule watching, you're looking at Denver and saying, okay, well, Denver's chasing them.
You make them sound like an upstart terror cell.
But Denver's chasing them, and you're looking at the schedule saying, okay, at Cleveland, they might lose that one. And then, you know, they play the Rockets on this day and Golden State on that day, blah, 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 blah. And then they go into Cleveland and win. And you're saying, well, damn, like that's a game that you're kind of hoping that they would lose. And they go in and win that game. So now you're looking at the Wolves and saying, okay, well, that's a team that's a game and a half behind you, and you get to play you play them twice in your final four games. So that's, I mean, that to me is the team to watch in terms of if the Wolves, if somehow they're going to miss the playoffs, like that to me is the team that's going to end up being the team that knocks them out.
Here's the thing about Denver. So they're currently 6-6 right now against the division. Mm-hmm. The Wolves are 9-4. So even if the Wolves lose the next two games to the Nuggets and they split the season series, as long as the Nuggets lose one more game, the Wolves would get the tiebreaker over the entire division.
Mm-hmm.
So Thunder, Blazers, whatever. The Nuggets have four games left against the division. The Wolves have two. So, no, three. Three games left.
Two against Denver and one against Utah.
Utah, yep. So the Nuggets could still jump the Wolves. And that way, so if they tie, the Nuggets could, in theory, leapfrog the Wolves, knock them out of the playoffs. And since they play so late in the season, I mean, Denver's going to be fighting for maybe it's that, whether it's that seed or whether it's making the playoffs at all.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have a lot to play for. And Gary Harris is really freaking good. People talk about Nikola Jokic. Gary Harris got pulled from Summer League in his second year after like two games for being too good. And he is a monster. He can hit threes. He can defend a little bit. He's a great player.
Did he get an extension? Did they sign him to a new contract?
I think they're starting to talk. I don't think he got it yet.
Okay.
He's going to get money, though.
Yeah, he's really going to get paid. He's really good. He's another one of those Michigan State guys that got drafted late and turned into a damn good player, Draymond Green.
Adrian Payne. Wait, no. Right, Mateen Cleaves. No. Yeah. I'm off.
And you brought up something interesting, too, before we get out of here, that the Wolves are really pulling for Oklahoma City to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because then they would get their pick.
See, the problem is that the Wolves make the playoffs and the Thunder don't. The Wolves have no draft pick because they got the Thunder's 2018 pick from the Rubio trade. And most of you probably know that already.
Yep.
So, and then the Wolves, of course, are still trying to pay off the Adrian Payne trade. God rest Flip's soul, but my word, that trade hurts.
Ooh, yeah.
And so you really don't want to see the Thunder miss the playoffs and the Wolves make it. So that's another subplot to watch there.
Isn't that amazing? Like it's almost like the Wolves would be in better shape if they missed the playoffs and Oklahoma City made it. Because then they would then the Wolves would have two first round picks, and it would be almost worse if they did make the playoffs and Oklahoma City didn't, because then they would have no draft picks.
Oh, one other crazy. The Spurs are a half a game away from missing the playoffs. Nobody's talking about this because they're the Spurs.
Oh, the Spurs. They'll be fine.
They are not fine. I mean, they might get Kawhi Leonard back this week.
Yeah.
But he struggled a lot when he came back from that quad injury. And if he's not really 100% or whatever that weird situation is, because the Spurs don't let anything out.
It's just so hard to imagine them not being in the playoffs, man.
It was like before the Cavs blew everything up at the deadline, and we're all like, it's LeBron. The Cavs will be fine. They do this every year. It's like, this is not every year. I mean, this is...
That's another team that I'm really a little bit surprised that they're playing so poorly after looking so good the first couple of games after that trade. I mean, they looked terrific. And then, like, ever since then, they've just been... It's almost like the same problems that they're having. Mm-hmm. Defensively, they're just not good, and they got beat by the Lakers the other night, and just...
Okay, so the East right now, Raptors 1, Celtics 2, Cavs in 4. Who's the third seed?
Indiana.
The Pacers! I know! I couldn't believe that!
What?
That franchise is never awful. I've looked this up
the
before.
Pacers
it's my
the
favorite thing.
The East right now. That is bananas.
Nobody expected this out. I mean, Victor Oladipo for MVP?
Wow, dude. Like, I didn't even notice that. That's unbelievable. Well, in the East, too, I mean, it's not quite as log-jammed as the West is. I mean, I think you've got your eight teams already set in stone because Detroit's the 9 seed and they're 5 games out.
Yeah.
So you got your eight teams in the East pretty much set for the most part, but... Basically, you know, seeds 4 through 8, and that includes Cleveland, They're separated by 3 games. Like, Milwaukee's the 8 seed, and they're 3 games behind the Cavs for the 4 seed. So, like, the Cavs, and I know LeBron had the quote the other day saying, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm a 1 seed, 2 seed, 4 seed, 8 seed, whatever. I mean, okay, LeBron, but, you know, if you got to go into, you know, if you got to play Boston in the first round, if you got to play Toronto in the first round because you guys slipped to the seventh spot in the East because you guys didn't get better defensively and all that stuff, I mean, that the East is going to be something to watch, too.
And everyone's going to be trying to take you down. Like, that's the thing. Oh, favorite Pacers stat, by the way, my favorite Pacers stat of all time. In 31 years, the Pacers have had one season with fewer than 30 wins.
What year was that?
89.
So that would have been, like, Reggie's second year, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. They, point being, they're never very bad.
Wow.
They can be mediocre, they can be bad. They've just never really been awful.
Wow.
It's a fun little thing I like to point out all the time.
The Pacers are the 3 seed in the East right now. That's bonkers. That's crazy.
Cavs could have stopped us.
Yeah.
That means that they're leading the Central. Not that divisions weigh much anymore in the standings, but wow.
Yeah. Man, that's unbelievable. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast at podcast1.com. You can also find us on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a favorable rating. You can find us at 1500ESPN.com as well. Reminder, we are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to everyone who submitted questions to us this week. And for Derek James, I'm Manny Hill. Enjoy your Wolves basketball. Lots more to go in the next few weeks. It's going to get pretty tightly contested in this playoff race. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.